Okay, and so to gardening, and it's time to welcome back our gardener, Jean Griffin. Morning, Jean.
Good morning, Tony. It's really nice to hear you, and particularly on this morning where the sun is shining, and I've just come in from the garden. So lovely.
yes, it's nice. I mean, things have changed dramatically with climate and winter weathers and temperatures and that. But we'll come back to that in a moment. If I can, I'd like to just talk to you very briefly about an email that I got after we spoke last month from Linda, who has said, my garden is acting like it's the end of March, but what can I do to protect all the budding plants, roses, clematis, from future frosts? Also, I have climbing rose in a temporary bed, and I'm waiting for an arch to be built. Will it stunt its growth at all when I move it? Any tips for giving a good second start?
Well, we've not really had a huge amount of frost this year, actually. So I'm hoping that she hasn't had to do too much of sort of covering up. The main thing with particularly things in pots, Tony, is that you need to protect the pot as well as the top of the plant. People don't think of that because then the roots get frozen and then you're on a hiding for nothing underneath there.
Yeah.
So it's always wiser to actually put a couple of bits of, bubble plastic, you know, around the bottom. So that's the first thing. Her rose, it doesn't make much difference. What I would advise her to do, actually, is I hope by now the arch has been completed. But then when she's actually doing the rose and she digs it up from where it is in its temporary bed, she needs to just trim up the roots just a fraction. I'm not going to say prune because you don't prune them too much, but just trim up any broken roots or damaged roots or anything like that. Mm. And then go to the garden centre and actually get some root grow.
Yeah.
And root grow is a mycorrhizal fungi. And that sprinkled on the roots itself will give that plant a real good start. Mycorrhizal fungi, root grow.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, roses are fairly hardy anyway. They grow through all sorts of things. I remember being a kid a very long time ago. And you'd think during the winter, when the winters were a little colder than they are now, then the rose would just disappear. But no, there it was next spring, beginning to sprout again. So, I mean, they're pretty hardy even if you leave them alone. And believe you me, I'm not much of a gardener. But I'm getting the hang of it and I'm learning. But Linda's email actually does bring us to the point that I was thinking about, really, because she starts her email saying it's only the end of February, which of course was when she wrote the email, but the garden is acting like it's the end of March. The seasons are altering. I mean, we have climate change, which is a whole different discussion, but we are noticing that our winters aren't as cold as they used to be, which means we can do more things in the garden during the winter. But it also brings forward some of the things we may well have done in April and May to March, doesn't it?
It does a little bit, but be, again, a little wary because nature is a fantastic thing and it will always catch up on itself. But with particularly things like she mentioned, the roses, which are starting, and the clematis, and mine are doing the same thing in the garden. And what I've done with the clematis is that I've actually pruned out all the dead stuff on it. And that's the same with the roses. But if I were you, I wouldn't prune the roses too hard for about another week or so, mainly because if we do get, and it's not unusual to have real bad frosts at the end of March, they'll start growing again. And therefore, those top new shoots will die off. And therefore, you have to prune again. So a bit of a waste of time, really, isn't it? So all you've got to remember is that although things are looking, you know, a little bit more forward, perhaps, than anything, we may still get those frosts to knock them back.
Yeah. Of course, we're now into meteorological spring, although there's astronomical spring, which doesn't happen for another, well, what is it? Another 2 weeks, I think,
is where we get to.
But the nights are getting, we are getting more daylights now, which, of course, a bit more sunshine as well, which does mean that things are going to start to happen very quickly in the garden now, aren't they?
Oh, they are. And everything is going. And what I said the last time, I think, to you is from now on, you can start sowing your tomatoes. Don't be in too much of a rush. I've only just, this week, funnily enough, I've sowed mine. Chilies you could have planted ages ago, which I think we mentioned last time. But, yeah, now is the time to start sowing your seeds. Don't mollycoddle them too much, but, you know, give them just a sort of a bit of a boost on if you've got an electric propagator, as I have, all well and good. But remember to keep the air on as well. And that brings me on to the greenhouse. You know,
The one that got blown over last month. Well, ours did anyway. It got blown over again. So we got another small one and have replanted some of the seeds and just hoping and praying that it works. But
have you got then? What have you sown?
Well, Mrs. Williams is in charge of all that stuff. I think you were talking about tomatoes, and I'm pretty certain that tomatoes are one of the things that she's been looking at. And there are a couple of other veggies that she's stuck into seed, but I don't know what the progress is this morning. I haven't checked.
Ah, well, if she's growing them really cold, tell her to just beware a little bit. So tomatoes, chilies and sweet peppers, sow them in a heated propagator or on a warm windowsill. And that the warm is the most important thing. You know, one of the things that's in the news an awful lot these days is microgreens.
Microgreens. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think what comes into that category. Would kale come into that?
No, not really.
Okay.
You're talking about things like purple radish, and you eat the leaves.
Ah, right, yeah.
So all that sort of thing. Sprouted seeds, mung beans, radish, cut and come again lettuce.
We're getting very trendy here, aren't we?
Oh, we are. Well, we are trendy people. Come on.
Okay.
Come on.
Okay.
Good. Yeah, so you can now start as well to plant your onions and shallots. They're bought in what is called a set. So you get a little tiny onion, which looks like it, pop it into the ground round about halfway so that the top of the small bulb is right up in the air. Well-prepared soil from probably about another week or so, and then they'll start to go and give you a real good crop in about July, August, sometime like that.
Yeah, I saw something the other week about some of this with planting seeds, because we've discussed this many times about the different times that you can plant seeds. You know, it's from and to, you plant from, say, March to May. I think the tip was that you don't plant all of the seeds all in one go. You do one strip. And then, say, a couple of weeks later, you do another strip, and a couple of weeks later, so you've got a constant supply for a period of time rather than having the whole lot
all at once. You know, people tend to, I mean, I've got an Italian guy on the allotment next to me, and where he gets rid of all these cabbages and lettuces, the Lord alone knows, because, I mean, he's got something like 40 lettuces and nothing coming on afterwards, which is, as you say, you've got to do succession planting. And if you're doing it just for you and the missus, or you and just a small family, do a sprinkle of seed. No point having 20 lettuces that are going to come out all at the same time. So do a little and often if you know, you're growing by yourself.
Yeah, we found this with tomatoes, you know, because you ended up with so many tomatoes, you didn't know what to do with them. So you either turn them into soup or the dog ate them. I'm guessing there is quite a long period over which you can plant tomatoes.
Not particularly tomatoes, but you can. So you need some. The best way with tomatoes, and it's quite an interesting one, actually. I don't know how you grow yours, Tony. Outside or inside?
In pots outside. Well, I mean, once they've seeded properly, they go outside.
Right. Okay. And so you've got them on a cane, have you, outside?
Yeah, they tend to be on a cane in a very, very large pot. It just stands. Okay. It just stands on the patio, and the sun shines on them, and you watch these little green things get bigger and bigger and bigger, and all of a sudden they turn red.
It's magic, isn't it?
Oh, absolute it is. It's
magic.
Wonderful.
It really is fantastic. One of the varieties that your wife could look at, actually, is one called Tumbling Tom. Tumbling Tom, and they do a yellow form and a red form, and you don't have to stake that at all.
All right. That's the problem, because they can get a bit top heavy, can't they, these plants?
Absolutely, absolutely. But Tumbling Tom for pots particularly, and the only thing you've got to be careful of is not to pop a small plant into an enormous pot all in one go.
Yeah.
It's not the wisest thing to do, because those poor little roots can't get into the enormous amount of space you've just given them.
Okay. So we'll pay a bit of attention to that. Now, you mentioned micro veg. There are some other things apart away from veg in the form of plants that are also coming into vogue as well, aren't there?
Yes, all sorts of things. Now, one of my chief hates, and I really do hate it, is cordylines. Everybody who knows me says, don't talk to Jean about cordylines.
Quarterlines?
Cordylines, C-O-R-D-Y-L-I-N-E.
I'm getting an education here. What are they?
A lot of people call them palms.
All right.
So they're on a stem, and they've got big, thick leaves and a great big flower head. They grow enormous. I mean, they seem to follow me round. I don't know why.
And you don't like them, do you?
No. Every time I move house, there's one in the blooming garden next door but one. Or, you know. Anyway, they make me sneeze. The flower smells of TCP, although the bees absolutely love them. The snag about cordylines is that the leaves are very... These are the big cordylines.
Yeah.
There are some variegated ones. There are some red ones. They're not so bad. But, you know, give me a good old-fashioned rose over that at any time. So,
okay.
Yeah, some of the roses that we're getting now, and somebody gave me a lovely rose, actually, and it's called the Generous Gardener.
Oh, lovely.
And that's really a rather nice thing to have, actually, isn't it?
It sounds rather splendid, actually. I mean, when you mentioned cordylines, suddenly all I got in my head is picture of a sunflower. I don't know why.
No.
But that's not it. Way you described it, with this large thing on the top, which could be a sunflower, but it's not.
No. What happens, it looks more like an enlarged lilac flower.
Yeah.
But it's bright white and it droops a little bit. Mm-hmm. The snag about the cordyline leaves is that they never rot down, and they all fall off and they're all brown and horrible on the floor. And in New Zealand, of course, they're a Maori sacred plant. And the leaves are so bad over there, because it's a bit warmer than here, that you're not allowed to put them into green waste. You have to put them, because they never rot down. Absolutely.
That's problematical, isn't it, really?
It is, really.
Yeah.
So some of the other things that are in vogue at this time of the year, I rather like a new variety of, it's called Ajuga reptans, right? And its common name is Bugle, B-U-G-L-E.
Right.
And there's a new German one on there, which has big, big glossy purple leaves and spikes of blue flowers. And it's a creeping perennial. So it acts as ground cover. So if you've got somewhere that perhaps has got a three-cornered lichen, which is a bit of a nuisance, or wild garlic, it will perhaps start to smother that out, which is what you need.
Yeah.
And the other one that I really like, and I've just cut mine back now, is a plant called Epimedium. Now, this is a little dwarf herbaceous plant, and there's a new one out called Amber Queen. Now, it's got evergreen foliage, and that foliage flushes red in the spring, and then it goes like a sort of a lovely glossy green colour.
Mm-hmm.
And it stays in leaf all through the winter. In the spring, you cut the leaves all off, and these little flowers pop up out of nowhere, by the look of it. A partial shade, great under trees. Now, a lot of people find difficulty, don't they, of finding something to plant under trees.
There's never anything there, is there, really? It all tends
absolutely
to be bare earth, and
absolutely
it's very dry, because the roots of the tree have taken everything.
That's right. So, as I say, Epimedium is a good one underneath trees. And going on to things like that are coming into growth at the moment, keep your eye open for the dreaded slugs and snails.
Oh, yeah.
That's the only thing I can suggest. There is a very good straw mulch on the market at the moment.
Yeah.
And you might think I'm saying this is wrongly, but I'm not. And it's called Strulch.
Strulch.
S-T-R-U-L-C-H.
Sounds like a wonderful old English word.
It does, doesn't it?
It does.
And it's an organic one.
Uh-huh.
And it's a straw mulch. But inside it, they've actually got... it's friendly, it's biodegradable, and it's really very good for slugs and snails because it has a deterrent in there, but an organic deterrent.
That's
so
good.
That's quite good.
Mm.
Yeah,
I can say that's covered that. Now, very briefly, because we're running short of time again, mm-hmm. as we always do, you said that you grow things through the gravel in your garden.
That's right.
Daffodils are one of those things that do this quite willingly and quite happily, aren't they?
Uh-huh.
Do you feed them or do you just let them grow on their own?
I actually just give them a little bit of feed, but I don't do that until the flowers are finished,
mm-hmm.
and then you need to build up the bulb. So I grow mine through it's like a medium. It's not plastic. It's a woven thing, and then the gravel goes on top, and the little plants come through that. So that's okay. So I just pull the gravel back, give them a little bit of a thing. I actually use Vitax Q4, which is a vegetable grower's fertilizer,
mm-hmm.
and it's got a bit of everything in it, and you soon see the difference. Seaweed fertilizer, again, is a good pickup. But if your daffodils are going blind, which means that they don't actually have any flowers this year, quite a common thing, they've probably, because they're too close together down below, dig them up, divide them, and they'll start flowering next year after a good feed.
I think there's a hint in there as well that applies to many, many things. Don't plant things too close together because it will inhibit the growth. Jean, I don't know where the time goes when we start talking gardening. The time just disappears. It's been good to catch up this morning. I was going to talk to you about early lawn growth, but I think we'll save that one for a month's time, if I may.
That's another one of my favourite things. Lawn. Oh.
I haven't got one either, but I know many people who have and take much pride in their lawns as well. But we'll come back to that
one.
But for now, Jean Griffin, good to catch up, and we will talk to you in a month's time.
Thank you very much, Tony. Bye-bye, everybody.
Good to talk. Thank you. Bye-bye.